You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. Now, if you haven't heard yet, this is me telling you, you need to take a look at the new boots from Lacrosse, and they fall under the Navigator series. Now, what they've done is they've taken the best parts of a rubber boot and the best parts of your traditional hiking and hunting boot, and they've mashed them together to come up with this new line of boots from Lacrosse, and that is the Navigator series. Now, they have the women's Windrose, they have the men's Windrose, and then they have the Atlas series within that as well. So go to lacrossefootwear.com and check out this new line of boots that they have. I've been using mine for a couple weeks now, and I am very impressed with the fit and the feel, and I can't wait to get them in the woods this hunting season and give them a trial run. So lacrossefootwear.com, check them out.
Hey guys, welcome to Land and Legacy Podcast. This is your host, Adam Keith. We're co-owners of a consulting company called, go figure, Land and Legacy. This is your number one podcast resource for all things land.
Each week, we're breaking down topics from land management, habitat management, conservation, farming practices, and real estate. We hope you guys enjoy it.
All right, guys, welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. Host Adam Keith here. Matt Dye is traveling today, so it's just me, and I've got returning, don't even need to say guest anymore, it's co-host, another host, because you guys have been on so much lately, and planning on being on in the future so much more. So we've got Frank Longcarriage with us. Frank, how you doing today?
I'm great, man. I'm great, Adam. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So, little bit of a preparation for the fall. Everybody right now, as Land and Legacy Podcast launched, we've been so much about habitat and conservation. And a lot of the hunting stories go back to deer, because that is the most popular animal that we chase, even though we love turkeys and we love all kinds of other stuff. But so many people listen to this podcast because they're deer hunters, so that's what we cover. But we have evolved into a more of a well-rounded, I hope, platform for different types of hunting. And with you and Kyle coming on, it only means that we're going to cover more upland small game, but then kind of tweak into more of the habitat with you guys as well. And so this week we're talking about upland bird hunting.
Yeah, great. My favorite subject in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
And the reason we're talking about it, so you deer hunters, why is this important, is because if you're a father and you've struggled to get your kids in the outdoors to have that same passion that you do, if you are a family member who is looking to get more of your family involved in the outdoors, if you are a person that's looking to enjoy your property more, if you're looking to improve the habitat to have better deer hunting, but you're looking for more benefits, not only for the deer, but other things to enjoy, this is a podcast for you. For a lot of reasons. Just like Frank, I grew up hunting quail. That was the first thing that really, quail and squirrels and rabbits were the first things that we got on, but it was quail hunting that really got me hooked on the outdoors. Frank, what about you?
Yep, same for me. It was quail hunting. I grew up in far southwest Missouri, and my dad had bird dogs growing up, and that's what we did. So we always, November 1st was opening day of quail season, and we always went November 1st when I was too young. When I was in school, you know, my dad always went, but when I was old enough to go and maybe skip school on November 1st, or if it opened on a weekend, you know, we would always make sure we hit November 1st, but then we would bird hunt up till deer season, and then we would stop and we would deer hunt for a week. And then once deer season was over, we would pick up and we would bird hunt again. And that's what we did. Quail were, I wouldn't say they were abundant, but they were, populations were still decent enough that we could go out and find four or five coveys a day and have some decent hunts. And of course, my dad grew up bird hunting. That's what he did. And so that was a passion of his. And so he just carried that on through his adulthood. And then when I came along, we just carried it on and I picked up on it. And so, yeah, bird hunting is what we did. We would quail hunt here at home. And then we would always make a trip to Western Kansas to pheasant hunt. And that was a trip that I enjoyed so much because it was a different landscape. Of course, it was a different bird. The pheasant was much, so this exotic bird that I wasn't used to hunting at home. And there was also Bob Whites out there. And so you could also get into some decent quail hunting out there too. So awesome. It was a trip that I enjoyed doing growing up. So that's kind of how I got into bird hunting.
Awesome. Awesome. For me, it was a little bit different. It was more right here at home, but definitely a lot of great things can come from upland bird hunting. And so that's what this podcast is about and how to get more people involved. And who knows where this podcast will take us. But before we jump in, we just want to say thanks to our partners, Deer Lab, for making this podcast possible. All right. So, Frank, let's talk about the importance of why we should care about upland bird hunting. Why is it, you know, in the past? And I think there's a lot of things that you can look at. There's, if you're looking at line graphs of different things that we're going to talk about, you can see hunter numbers, and that line is dropping. We're losing hunters annually. If you look at upland bird populations, for the most part, they're declining. If you look at even small game populations, for the most part, declining. But in the past, and we're looking at, let's say, 30-year graphs, but if you look at, I don't even like using this word, but let's just say mature deer hunting mindset. And I'm guilty of this. Trying to focus just on mature deer and getting focused on harvesting only mature deer. In the last 30 years, that's picked up. As deer hunters, that's been kind of the thing. We're looking for mature deer. I would say that I feel like that's a little bit responsible for why we've lost some deer hunters and some hunters in general, is because we've focused so much on trying to kill mature deer that we stop taking friends hunting, or kind of that deer camp atmosphere where we all just get together and we go out there. And I feel like that's been the art of deer camp, the art of the camaraderie of the hunt has been lost because of that. What do you think?
I'm right there with you. I think you're right. Focusing on a certain segment of the population, mature deer, and just focusing all your effort on that. And I really think that can take away some of the fun of hunting. And hunting at its core is a sport that is fun. It gets us back to our roots. It gets us back to nature. And it's something that we can do with others. And I love nothing more than to hunt with my family, with my father, now with my son. He's old enough to bird hunt with me now. And last year, to go on his first quail hunt and to see him harvest his first quail, I was more excited than when I harvested my first quail. Absolutely. It was just great. And when he came to me later on that evening and said, even though we had walked a few miles that day, he said, "Dad, that was great. When can we do that again?"
Yeah.
And I couldn't have been more proud when he did that. And that was, and it wasn't a big deer. It wasn't a trophy class animal. It was a bobwhite quail. But in his mind, and in my mind too, that was a trophy. And I hate to get away from that. It's something that at its core, it brings families together. And bird hunting is a great way to do that, because it is something that you can certainly do by yourself, but it's so much more fun when you have a small group of people, one to two or three other folks out there bird hunting. You can laugh and talk and amongst yourselves. You don't have to be quiet, except for certain situations, maybe with pheasant hunting. But, we have conversations when we're out there walking in the fields, and And it's just a great, avenue to enjoy the outdoors, explore the outdoors, but also interact with your family and with the people that you're hunting with, much more so than if you're solely focused all of your energy onto killing one animal and you put your entire effort into that all year that maybe you miss, you know, what the bigger picture is.
No, for sure. For sure. To me, I feel like focusing on that, trying to make that experience where, oh, they've got to harvest this large animal or something that's really significant. It's the same thing as getting your kid a Christmas morning. They open up this toy that you spent all this money on and they play with the box more.
Yes.
They're not really – sometimes we think that it has to be this big extravagant thing, but simply walking through the field or the woods chasing birds and watching the dog work is just as exciting to them, if not more, than actually flushing the covey up or multiple coveys up and shooting.
Sure.
And that was the thing for me. I mean, I enjoy just going out there and walking and having fun and didn't care anything about actually harvesting or filling my pouch full of quail. Do you remember the first quail you ever shot?
I remember exactly where I was. We were hunting in McDonald County, Missouri, which is the very southwest corner. And that year I had bird hunted several times that year with my dad. And of course I was small. I don't remember how old I was. I was probably 13, 14, something like that. And I really wasn't a very good shot then, especially with quail, because they get up and there's just all this flush of action and it's hard to focus on one bird. And I remember taking several shots that year and not hitting anything. But on the last day of season, we went out and hunted a place that we had hunted before, pretty familiar, always could find a covey or two. And dogs pointed a covey. And this time I actually focused and shot my quail. And yeah, I remember exactly the way I was at. And it was exciting to me. It was something that really stuck with me. And then the next year, much the same way, I'd hunted all season, made some bad shots, couldn't hit anything. And then finally got one. So I hunted two season and had killed two quail. And I can remember exactly where I was and how that went down. And then by the third season, I'd hunted enough, shot enough clay pigeons, had enough covey rises that I learned to not covey shoot, to pick out the birds. And I was much more successful after that. But yep, I certainly remember where I was.
I remember mine as well. So I had a little bit of a funny story and a kind of a tarnished first shot. I was hunting with a 410 and we kicked up with multiple people and we kicked up a covey, or I guess the dogs pointed and we kicked them up. Nice shot and got all excited, and then come to find out, like, one other guy said, oh, I'd actually shot at that bird too. It's like, oh man, who shot it, me or him?
Yeah.
And so then a week later went back out and kicked up another one, but I was using 20 gauge this time and nobody shot but me, and I hit it. My dad's like, 100% that one was you. So it was like, yeah, which one was the first one? But I remember both of them very, very, very well. So
definitely
something that sticks with you. Out of your kids, your boy, what is their favorite? What is his favorite hunting trip? Do they like deer or turkeys?
So I have two boys. Only one is old enough to hunt yet, and he has, so this, my son Caleb has killed four turkeys. He's killed a couple of deer and quail and a few doves. He really, really enjoys turkey hunting. That was the first thing that he was really successful at. He really enjoys. He loves everything. We were dove hunting the other day and there was some, the action was kind of slow and there were some squirrels in the woods that were, chewing around on some hickory trees. And so he went after them. It doesn't matter. You know, he likes to hunt, but I would say that quail or that turkey is probably his favorite. But he got his first bird dog this year, about 2 months ago. He's really excited about her. He's excited about going pheasant hunting this year. He's going to be old enough to go. So he really enjoys that aspect of it, the bird hunting. That last year was his first year to go, and he really enjoyed it. I think, and what's really cool about turkeys and bird hunting is they're at opposite ends of the year, opposite sides of the calendar. So they don't interfere. They don't conflict. Mm-hmm. And so you can be really into turkey hunting and be really addicted to that, and then be really into bird hunting, and you don't have any conflicts. And so that's kind of the way I am. Turkeys are probably my second favorite thing to go after, and I'm glad that they don't conflict, because I don't know what I would do at that point. But
yeah.
Caleb is he's really into the turkeys, but the bird hunting I think is coming.
Yep. I as a kid, I would have said that it was quail or rabbit hunting, turkey hunting, and down the list was deer hunting. And you know, if quail populations were still really good around our farm, I'd probably still rank it above deer hunting if I had that opportunity, because I yes. am a guy who likes to walk and see things and work with dogs. And I know that may come as a shock to a lot of our viewers, because a large part of our work is revolving around deer, but we won't lie to you and say that it's our absolute best thing or favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, when it comes to the upland side, what's the preparation? You know, deer hunting, my gosh, comes down to really a year round thing. As soon as season's over, it's like I gotta prepare for next season.
Sure.
What do you think is so much of an attraction or loss? People don't understand the attraction with upland birds. What if you're not a landowner, what are you doing to prepare for season?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So it comes down to a couple of things. One, if you and I'm in a situation right now where I've got a trained dog that knows what she's doing. And so I don't, you know, we just work throughout the year with conditioning and things like that. But, you know, I'm not training a dog. Now, that said, my son Caleb just got a new dog a couple of months ago. And so I'll be working with him to train his dog. So that is going to be a large part of what we do this fall and next summer, is getting his dog ready to hunt in for the fall of 2020.
Gotcha.
And so that's a huge part of it, is you've got the ability to bring a dog up from a puppy, training it basic commands, to getting it to where it wants to point and hunt birds. And a lot of it is instinct, but as you train, you can really refine that instinct and make a great hunting dog and hunting companion. So a large part of the preparation for bird hunting is, if you don't have a dog that's well trained, or if you've got a new dog, a large part of that, and what makes it so fun, is preparing that dog. And not only are you preparing a dog that can hunt birds, but you're building a relationship, and it becomes more than a hunting tool. It becomes a companion, a beloved member of the family. And they really are. Before we got the puppy, and I was just, you know, with my dog that I didn't need to work with much, a huge part of it is not so much preparation that you do in the field, but is following populations. And so, for example, I like to bird hunt in different places. So we bird hunt here at home, of course, Missouri, but bird hunt in Kansas, whether it's western Kansas for pheasants or north central Kansas for prairie chickens. Made trips to Wisconsin to hunt grouse, been to Montana to hunt various plains species, going to Wyoming later on for sage grouse and blue grouse. And a large part of that, and what's so much fun to me, is to follow the weather patterns, to follow reports, and to kind of do some investigation to see what these populations are going to be, making phone calls to local biologists and just talking about what these populations look like in the places that I want to go. And I really enjoy that aspect of doing my research and doing my homework. It's sort of like preseason scouting for a deer hunter.
Absolutely.
Going out looking for scrapes and rubs and bedding areas and things like that. except a lot of my preseason scouting is online or it's on the phone talking to people. And I super enjoy that part of it because you can really get a, you can really get an intimate feel for what to expect before you get out there. So for instance, when I went to Montana a few years ago to hunt, a place I had never been, I had done enough homework and knew what to expect that by the second day, we kind of had it narrowed down and had a really good hunt because we had really done our homework and our preseason scouting. And I really enjoy that part of it. So those are a couple of things that you can to get prepared during the off season for bird hunting, working with your dog, of course, and then also doing your preseason scouting, really important.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's definitely sounds a lot like public ground hunting for me. We used to, whenever we were like, okay, we're going to this conservation area, it was like trying to do all the research, try to call the biologist or the technician that's over that conservation area, talk to them, figure out what it is that's occurring. Are there acorns on the trees this year? I remember one hunt. We finally drew for the managed hunt at Whetstone Creek, which at the time was one of the top ones in the state. And we called the technician who was there, and he's like, well, we had we're currently dealing with EHD, so there's been some pretty big kill-offs. There are no acorns, and it was a wet spring, so there are no crops.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, goody, this is the best year yet. And, you know, if we were to have been in that same scenario with upland birds, we probably wouldn't have gone. Because they would have basically said, oh, it was a really, really wet spring and there was no hatch. So the numbers are way down. Oh, great.
Yep.
So, no, I definitely I enjoy that aspect of it as well. And it's exactly why Matt and I are hoping to do, and my brother and even Seth Harker, we're trying to do some public ground whitetail hunting this fall, of doing that, where you basically pick an area on a map and you're like, that area looks good. Looks like that's going to be the spot we're going to start. So,
That's pretty great. That really is a huge part of it. And one of the real draws of upland bird hunting for me, where I live, I can go 30 minutes to an hour and be in quail hunting and find birds. But if I really want to, you know, get the full experience, I'm going to have to travel. And that is one of the real draws to me is exploring new places, hunting new birds, and then doing that preseason homework. I really enjoy that aspect of it. I think that's one of the draws that bird hunting gives you is you really don't know what to expect when you get there. And it's a large part of the adventure is, are you going to find birds? Is this going to be an experience, you know, that's going to be, you know, you're going to get into birds and it's going to be fairly easy, or is you really going to have to work at it? You know, there's really that unknown there that kind of is a mystery that I think really is intriguing.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Not to get away from quail and upland.
Sure.
But we are going to do something I'm going to ask you, have you seen the new state record brown trout that was caught recently?
Oh yeah, over Taney Como.
Yes. I don't know if anybody, we'll share it on our Facebook page, but if our listeners haven't heard it, it was 2.5 pounds shy of the world record, I think.
That's
what it
huge.
Said yeah 2.5 pounds shy of the world record, which was caught in New Zealand. I didn't know if you had seen that. I guess the guy had caught it on some little Berkeley power worm or something like that, but it was ended up weighing in at 41 and a quarter, or it was 41.25 inches long, had a girth of 28 inches, and it weighed 40 pounds, 6 ounces.
Dang. It's crazy.
Unbelievable.
Those things are just ridiculous, those brown trout. I've fished a few times in the tailwaters of the White River where they runs out of Bull Shoals.
Yeah.
And we've hung some fish there. We used to go in the wintertime when the shad would kill and they would come through the dam, and we hung some fish there that we just couldn't turn them. You're just like, well, we'll see where this takes us. And then it take you down river and you finally lose it. Like, never saw, I don't know how big it was, but just some amazing trout in those tailwaters like that.
Yeah.
Huge.
You know, I'm looking at the picture of this thing. It looks like they're holding a huge slug.
Yeah.
Not many, you know, I always look at trout and it's a little bit slimy compared to, the bass species that we usually target are crappie. And so it looks like he's holding a big slug. But I read where they put it in a tank to try and keep it alive before they could get it officially weighed. And it looks like it died.
Did it?
Yeah. So, yeah. But big shocker. Crazy. Those things aren't real tough. So.
No,
anyway, yeah, I wondered if MDC had been talking about that. I'm sure it cycles through.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool. Getting back to the upland birds. So when is season kickoff for you?
Well, November 1st is the first day of quail season in Missouri, but we're going to try to make a hunt to Wyoming in late September for sage grouse and blue grouse. So that'll be late September, that'll be a really exciting hunt. There is a hunt that I do in north central Kansas that opens September 15th, and that's the greater prairie chicken, early season greater prairie chicken in Kansas. They have a season that opens September 15th and runs through October 15th. And so the reason for that is greater prairie chickens are an excellent game bird. They're super fun to hunt. But during the traditional bird season, which opens in the late fall and winter time, so November through January, greater prairie chickens are extremely spooky. They get in big flocks. They usually are super hard to approach. And so for a guy that's hunting with a bird dog, it's not much of a sport because it's super hard to get close to. Most people at that time of the year post up along crop fields and shoot them as they're coming into crop fields, much like dove hunting. This early season that starts in September and lasts into October allows people with bird dogs to hunt prairie chickens and have much greater success because the birds are in family groups. So you'll have an adult with some young of the year, and by that time they're pretty much fully grown, or you'll have flocks of males that may be two or three males together, so you have these small flocks and they're not near spooky, and you can get some excellent dog work and get some excellent hunting early in the season. So I've done that quite a bit, and it's a lot of fun to go out there and do that. You get dog work, you dogs point, you know, and you get some good fun hunting.
Oh, that's awesome.
It can be pretty hot. So I generally don't go September 15th because it could be 90 degrees out there where we go. So I generally wait until the first part of October. So conditions are cooler, you know, in the 70s or low 80s, and hunt early in the mornings or in the evenings, and, you know, give the dogs a break. And you can combine that with dove hunting. I've done that too, where you go out and you hunt chickens early, or you hunt doves early and then go hunt chickens later on. So you can get a multi-species hunt out of it.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's something that's opening up here in a couple weeks.
That's super cool. That sounds very, very interesting. You know what, since getting to know you guys, and for me, it's always been quail and I haven't never done anything else, but to think about September 15th is deer season opens up and archery season in Missouri. So it's like, I thought everybody's doing that, but it's like, no, people are going somewhere else to hunt something different.
Yep.
It's like, wow. And then,
yeah, not to interrupt you, but a lot of early grouse seasons open in September. So bird season in Montana opens September 1. People are already bird hunting out there in the Dakotas and Nebraska and Kansas. You can hunt prairie grouse, so sharp-tailed grouse and prairie chickens, you know, in mid-September. So there's a lot of people that are gearing up right now to bird hunt. And in fact, there are people in Montana that are actually harvesting upland birds right now.
That's crazy. Yeah, and there's people shooting deer right now, too, up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely, man, there's a lot of attraction to be able to go to Montana on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. That would be, if I could afford that every year, I would go, because it's a wonderful place, full of game to hunt, and lots of open access too, and that's really the real attraction to it.
So let's talk about, before we wrap up, let's talk about the outlook for this fall. And I'm going to ask a lot out of you here, but what's the populations look like here in Missouri for bobwhite quail?
Okay, so break it down. Let's break it down into, say, North Missouri versus South Missouri. So let's take South Missouri first. This is where I hunt most of the time. We had a pretty good winter as far as not much snow and not much ice. So we had a good number of breeders coming into the breeding season. We didn't have any winter kill to speak of. And so last fall we had decent hatch, or last summer we had a decent hatch. So we had a pretty good number of breeders going into season. And we had a really wet spring in May. And so if quail were early breeders like turkeys, that would be a real problem. But most of our quail, according to our quail research, about half of our quail hatch after July 1. So they're hatching later on into the summer period. And most of our hatching season in southern Missouri, at least southwest Missouri, was pretty dry. There were some pockets where there was some isolated rain, and I'm sure that there were spots where we lost broods to isolated rain showers. But overall, for the most part, it was fairly dry in that prime hatching season, and which is encouraging for our quail hatch, because quail need warm, dry weather after they hatch, because they can't thermoregulate for about 2 weeks. And so they really need good, warm, dry weather to make the most out of that first two-week period. And so we had good conditions, and I'm getting good reports of quail this year, of broods. Seeing quail this year in places where we've never seen them before, not to say that they weren't around, but to say that we're actually seeing those coveys popping up in places that we really hadn't seen them. So that's encouraging. So I think the outlook this year, I think in southwest Missouri and west central Missouri, is pretty good from my standpoint. Now, we will really know more in October, because in October is when we go out and do all of our quail surveys.
Oh, gotcha.
So we go out early in the morning. We listen for coveys. We count the number of coveys that we hear. We do that throughout the month of October and do repetitions, so make sure we have good data. And then we can compare that to previous years and see what it's going to look like. But indications based on weather, based on the brood reports I'm seeing, have been pretty good. Now, I take North Missouri. Last year, they had good numbers of birds last year going into the winter, but they had a pretty strong winter in North Missouri. So lots of snow, cold weather, ice, and the folks that I've talked to up there were pretty discouraged about what they were going to see this spring in terms of winter kill. They thought they had a substantial overwinter kill. I've talked to a couple of biologists up there that works in northeast Missouri, and one works sort of in the southern part of northwest part of Missouri, and both of them said that their spring call counts were down about 25% from what they were last year.
Wow.
Which is disappointing, but it's encouraging from their standpoint in that they expected it to be worse. So when they were down 25%, they thought, wow, we were going to be down much worse than that. So they are starting from a lower number of breeding birds. But I've also heard some good reports of broods on the ground there. So I'm not as familiar with that location just because I don't work up there.
Yeah.
Just from talking to folks, their number of breeders that they had going into season was down about 25%, but they're seeing broods on the ground. So again, we'll know more in October. And maybe as we get closer to October, if we do another podcast, we can give you some updates on numbers there, because I'll talk to some of those guys up there and see what they're seeing. But I'm encouraged for southern Missouri and southwestern Missouri. North Missouri is kind of an unknown commodity at this point.
Gotcha.
Okay. Well, man, looking forward to circling back, talking as the season progresses.
Oh, absolutely.
Talking habitat as well in the future. Hopefully everybody enjoyed this podcast and is intrigued in getting their kids or their family members involved in more bird shooting, wing shooting, because I really do believe it's one of the best ways to get people more interested in the outdoors than deer hunting.
I think so. And one of the things about it is if you look at bird hunting and you break it down to what you really actually need, it's a sport that you can get into with a very small investment. It's not, there's not these huge impediments to getting into the sport that on the surface there may be. You know, you don't need a $3,000 shotgun. You don't need all of these trappings and these things that you see a lot of times. I grew up and my dad grew up with a brown duck vest and a shotgun and a bird dog that was trained but didn't have the highest lineage, and wasn't a field trial dog, and found great numbers of birds. So you can get into it with a fairly low investment, and it is a super fun way to spend a fall day. It's just it's my favorite thing to do, and I don't want people to think that there's a lot of impediments to getting into the sport. The biggest impediment is getting into it is having populations close by, and with homework you can find those birds. So I encourage people to really look into doing it, because we're losing our bird hunter numbers, and that's discouraging.
Yep. We're losing hunters all the way around, and that's very Absolutely. Discouraging. So
yes. We
got to do our part to get people back out there. So,
yep.
All right, Frank. Well, appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely.
If anybody has any questions or would like to have Kyle or Frank out to your property to assess your habitat for upland birds, or just in general, just have you guys out there to look at your habitat, shoot us an email, info@landandlegacy.tv. Thanks again, Frank.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
Yeah.